prime riverfront real estate boasting stunning views, sumptuous period detail, and friendly phantoms. Sound like the home for you? Well, if you're in the market for a haunted house, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Haunted Homes. One Lavetta Place, Nyack, New York. An exceptional riverfront property boasting unparalleled views of the Hudson, this 7-bedroom, 5,000-square-foot Victorian mansion is nearly picture-perfect. In fact, it even featured in a painting by famed American realist Edward Hopper, who spent his formative years here in this quaint historic village just 15 miles north of New York City. Built in the 1890s, the three-story clapboard-faced home retains many of its original architectural features. Arched doorways, stained glass windows, inlaid hardwood floors, a wraparound porch, and a corner turret offering panoramic views of the town and waterfront. Reminiscent of the eccentric, asymmetrical house of horrors in Tim Burton's fantasy comedy classic Beetlejuice, One Lavetta Place just might be the quintessential Victorian mansion, at once charming and chilling. If it looks like it might be haunted, that's because it is. A New York State Supreme Court judge even declared it so, stating in a 1991 ruling, "As a matter of law, this house is haunted." So if you do decide to purchase the property, you must go into it with this knowledge. And in the event you choose to sell, you are legally obligated to disclose its hauntedness to any future buyers. But we'll come back to its legal status later. Firstly, some historical background. While very little is known about the early history of the house itself, Nyack and the surrounding region have a long and storied past. The name Nyack comes from the original Native American word used to describe the land. Nay-ack, in Algonquin dialect, translates as fishing place, suggesting that for many centuries before European settlers arrived, the local Tappan tribe prized the location for its bountiful food supply. The first Europeans who arrived to the area in 1675 were of Dutch origins. Harman Dowson, an immigrant from Freeland, is believed to have been its first white inhabitant. In 1687, he purchased a strip of land from the Tappan, where he established a farm called New Oranje, or Orange, named after the Dutch principality of Orange. It would eventually grow to a larger settlement, an incorporated town called Orangetown, of which the village of Nyack is now a part. Though most of the earliest settlers were Dutch, the region was officially under the command of the British, who gained control of the Dutch American colonies in 1664. They didn't expel the Dutch, however, and in fact, the bustling river ports along the Hudson benefited from a diverse and far more liberated existence than the stricter New England colonies further east. And so, for a time, the little village of Nyack enjoyed peace and prosperity. That is, until King George III came along and began dismantling many of their cherished liberties. On the eve of the American Revolution in July of 1774, local leaders met at a tavern to draft the Orangetown Resolutions, their grievances against increasing restrictions and taxation. The document was deemed treasonous and the authors traitors to the crown. When war broke out in August of 1776, the British rushed to gain control of the Hudson, recognizing its significance as a major inland tributary with several important ports. Sailing up the river, they launched cannons at the settlements that dotted its banks, destroying homes and businesses as they went. By autumn, they had secured New York City, Harlem, Bloomingdale, and other communities along Upper Manhattan. The Patriots, however, firmly held the river further north. ships attempting to land in Nyack were consistently pushed back, partly thanks to the brute force of the whaling fleet, a fleet of sturdy ships and hardy sailors who fiercely defended the settlement from a multitude of British naval incursions. British attacks on Nyack became ever frequent, an extreme response to what was then only a tiny hamlet of a dozen or so homes, but which nevertheless continued to stymie the Brits at every turn. Much of the damage was inflicted on property, but there were human casualties too. After one of the more successful raids, horrified locals discovered the body of a Mrs. Garrett Myers, left to rot with her face smashed in after attempting to protect herself from British soldiers. Another young woman was reportedly raped and left for dead. It was a tumultuous and terrifying time for the little community on the Hudson. Of course, all this violence and destruction occurred more than a century before One Lavetta Place was constructed, but these momentous events seem to have left their mark on the region. As many locals believe, the Revolutionary-era past is still very much present in the Orangetown area. In the decades following the war, Nyack returned to peaceful prosperity. By the early 1800s, it was a center for sandstone quarrying, the main source of building material for New York City. It also hosted a thriving built building industry and latterly a shoe manufacturing industry. By the turn of the 19th century, Nyack's population had swelled to just over 4,000, with many fashionable new homes built for its affluent residents. Several of these, including One Lavetta Place, were built in the popular Queen Anne style, an eclectic architectural hybrid loosely inspired by Baroque and Renaissance buildings, characterized by asymmetrical facades and often incorporating towers, turrets, and wraparound porches. As new builds, they must have appeared modern and flashy and not at all spooky. The builder and earliest owner of One Lavetta Place has been lost to the sands of time. But it was probably a prominent local family, one who could afford a palatial home with a prime view of the Hudson. It might have even been one of the old Nyack families who could trace their lineage back to the earliest days of its foundation. One possibility is the Perry family, a dynasty descending from one Uriah Perry, who settled in the area in 1750. Certainly, a succession of Perry family members are known to have resided at One Lavetta Place throughout the first half of the 20th century. What was life like for the Perrys at this opulent riverside home? Did they ever encounter any ghosts? Or were they the cause for the ensuing haunting? We may never know. What we do know is that by 1960, the property had been left vacant. And as neighboring Nyack families continued to enjoy life on the quiet cul-de-sac, the mansion at the end of the lane remained conspicuously empty for the next 7 years. A later occupant, Cynthia Cavanaugh, née Ackley, once remarked how strange it was that even the vagrants and hippie travelers who frequented the nearby riverbank steered clear of the old house. There were no signs of squatting or vandalism when the home was finally purchased again in 1967. The buyers were Cynthia's parents, George and Helen Ackley. George worked for Martin Marietta, an aviation company, in a job that moved him around a fair bit. And whenever he and his family were stationed somewhere new, George would buy up property, fixer-uppers that he would duly fix up and sell on for a profit when the time came to move again. Helen, an amateur writer and stay-at-home mother of four, would help with DIY jobs, painting, decorating, and general homemaking. She enjoyed these activities, though perhaps felt a secret longing to stay put for longer in the houses she lovingly turned into homes. Before One Lavetta Place, she'd never stayed in the same place for more than a few years. But the house in the Hudson was different. It was special. It would be Helen's home for the next 2 decades. The first murmurings of ghosts came just before the Ackleys officially moved in. Whilst George had already started working in Manhattan and was camping out in the house by himself, Helen was busy packing up the family's former home in Maryland. She visited him 1 week, without the kids, to get a sense of what was needed to make the house family-friendly. The neighbor kids, engaged in a ball game across the road, paused to watch her arrive. "You moving in?" they called over. She confirmed she was. "Any kids?" She confirmed this too, and asked if they wanted a tour. While some of the children accepted the invitation, others hung back nervously. "They think they're ghosts in there," explained the braver ones. Well, this was hardly surprising, thought Helen at the time. After all, the big old house on the dead-end road had been left abandoned for nearly a decade. Naturally, the local kids were going to spread rumors about it. It quickly became clear, however, that it wasn't just the children who believed the home was haunted. Later that day, a plumber who was tasked with bringing the old water system back up to working standard asked Helen how long she intended to stay at the house. She explained she'd be there until 4:30 when she had to go to collect her husband. "What's the matter? Have you run into problems?" she asked. The plumber hesitated. "It's not that, Mrs. Ackley. I keep hearing footsteps on the stairs and walking around overhead. I must have run up and down those steps 6 times the other day and I couldn't find anybody. I'm ready to go now, but I don't want to leave you alone here." Bemused but calm, she told the plumber not to worry. She'd have to get used to being alone here sooner or later. George, too, had clearly already experienced something in her absence. That night, as Helen got ready for bed, she made her way to the hall to turn out the light. Her husband, who typically slept in complete darkness, asked what she was doing. The transom above their door allowed light to pour into the bedroom, so the answer seemed fairly obvious. Yet, he firmly told her not to worry about it. Evidently, he'd changed his sleeping habits in the short time he'd spent alone in the old home. This would set the tone for the next 20 years at One Lovetta Place. A slight uneasiness, perhaps, an awareness that the family wasn't ever truly alone, but was never a proper sense of fear. In fact, over the years, the Ackleys grew to feel almost comforted by their ghostly housemates. Helen, in particular, couldn't imagine life without them. In May of 1977, Helen Ackley published a personal essay entitled "My Haunted Home on the Hudson" in Reader's Digest magazine. Little did she know, a decade later, this seemingly innocuous little human interest piece would become the focus of legal scrutiny. But it began life as a simple exercise for a creative writing class, an opportunity for Helen to write about what she knew. And by now, Helen knew her ghosts. She wrote of the unseen hands that gently shook her daughter's bed frame each morning to wake her for school. When politely asked, these helpful spirits took a break over the Christmas holidays to allow the girl to sleep in. She wrote of mysterious little gifts appearing out of nowhere, a pair of tiny silver tongs for Cynthia when she got married, a golden baby ring to honor the birth of their first grandchild. Aside from a few missing items, including a hard-earned ham sandwich that George had planned to eat after a long day renovating the house, the ghosts were mostly generous and polite. One day, as Helen balanced on a stepladder, applying a coat of fresh paint to the living room, she sensed someone watching her. She turned her head to confirm that she was indeed alone in the room, and yet the feeling persisted, so she spoke aloud to the invisible presence. "I hope you like the color," she said. "We hope you're pleased with what we're doing to the house. It must certainly have been lovely when it was first built." This time, when she looked over her shoulder, she saw a figure, a man with piercing blue eyes, a cap of white hair, and rosy red cheeks. He was as solid as any living, breathing man, only hung suspended in midair, nodding and smiling in approval. Based on her description, his style of clothing seemed to predate the house by many decades. Knee-length breeches, shiny black pumps with large buckles, and white ruffled stock ties were the height of fashion for men in the Georgian period, not the Victorian. So who was this friendly phantom? He may or may not have been the same ghost her cousin's wife Ingrid later witnessed. On a weekend visit in the summer of 1974, Helen greeted her noticeably shaken house guest at breakfast. Her hands trembling as she downed her first cup of coffee, Ingrid began to recount her unearthly experience. Just before dawn, she awoke to the sounds of someone shuffling about her room. Against the pale light filtering in the French doors, she saw the silhouette of a man in a Revolutionary-era long coat. Less flamboyant and more military than the man Helen had earlier encountered. Ingrid felt the mattress sag as the shadowy figure took a seat at the end of her bed. With his back to her, he pulled a book out of thin air and began silently consulting its pages. The book, she said, glowed as if lit from the inside. For a few quiet moments, he flipped through it, seemingly searching for something important. And then, at last, he closed the volume, got to his feet, and vanished. There was also a female phantom, a woman in white, whom Cynthia affectionately referred to as her ghost. This spirit was seen on at least 3 separate occasions. The most memorable sighting was when Cynthia was a teenager. Late one night, long after the rest of the family had gone to sleep, she sat up watching TV alone in the living room. After a while, she got up to prepare for bed. Casually glancing through her bedroom door, she caught sight of something unexpected. An ethereal woman seated on the edge of her bed, gazing into the dresser mirror, brushing her long blonde hair. The woman turned to Cynthia and nodded. Cynthia nodded back and turned away. Back in the living room, she steadied her nerves, retrieved a glass of water, and then calmly announced, "Okay, I'm coming to bed now." The ghost, having respectfully taken the hint, was no longer present when Cynthia returned. Years later, as an adult, Cynthia came back to One Lavetta Place with her husband-to-be, Mark Cavanaugh. Though she had told Mark about the family's ghosts, she'd never actually described them to him in much detail. When he later reported seeing a blonde woman in a soft white dress seated on the edge of his bed gazing down at him, Cynthia instantly knew who it was. "You see my ghost," she exclaimed. The couple speculate that, perhaps, the spirit had come to check out the new prospective family member. She approved of Mark, they think. So, all in all, the haunting of One Lavetta Place was a relatively benign affair, with ghosts of an amiable variety and stories full of whimsy rather than worry. So why then did it stir up so much controversy when, in 1989, Helen Ackley decided to sell her beloved haunted home? By this time, Helen was a widow in her early 60s, looking to downsize and move to a warmer climate. Of course, she'd miss her house on the Hudson and her ghostly companions, but she wouldn't miss the constant upkeep the old pile demanded. It was time to pass it on to a new family, one who could make their own whimsical memories here. It wasn't hard to find a buyer. After all, it was a prime property in a prime location just 40 minutes from downtown New York. One Jeffrey Stambofsky, a bond trader based in Manhattan, was the first to make an accepted offer. Jeffrey and his wife were expecting their first child, and as such were looking for a suburban family home within commutable distance from the city. One Lavetta Place fit the bill nicely, and they promptly made a down payment of $32,000 to secure their future home. From here, the stories differ. According to Helen and her estate agents, Ellis Realty, the Stambofskys were informed of the property's haunted reputation prior to entering into an agreement. Not only had Helen mentioned the ghosts in person, commenting to the Stambofskys that the spirits would enjoy having young children in the house again, but it was also disclosed by her agents. They told Jeffrey that Helen would not sign the contract until he acknowledged the haunting. The buyer reportedly laughed and retorted, "We'll have to call Ghostbusters then." Both parties signed. According to Jeffrey, however, he was never informed of any ghosts. Never warned of the home's reputation, and because he wasn't a Nyack local, he claimed, he would have no way of knowing it unless the seller forewarned him. Clearly, he wasn't a Reader's Digest fan either. So, he says, he was left completely in the dark until a neighbor mentioned it in passing after the down payment had already been made. Jeffrey wanted out, and he wanted his money back. When Helen refused, he took her to court. The complaint was as follows. The defendant made material misrepresentations of the property in that she failed to disclose that she believed the house was haunted by poltergeists. Moreover, the seller shared this belief with her community and the general public through articles published in Reader's Digest, as well as in the local paper. In November 1989, approximately 2 months after the parties entered into the contract of sale, the house was included in a five-house walking tour and again described in the local press as being haunted. Prior to closing, plaintiff learned of this reputation and unsuccessfully sought to rescind the sale and obtain return of his down payment without resort to litigation. The plaintiff then commenced this action for that relief and alleged that he would not have entered into the contract had he been so advised, and that as a result of the alleged poltergeist activity, the market value and resellability of the property was greatly diminished. Well, the first judge wasn't buying it. This time around, the law of caveat emptor, or buyer beware, was upheld. Jeffrey was basically told to take a hike. But he appealed and got his case taken all the way up to the New York State Supreme Court. It would be a landmark case, generating a huge amount of publicity and eventually serving as a widely cited case study in law classes throughout the country. Popularly known as the Ghostbusters ruling, the Supreme Court trial actually resulted in a 3-2 majority in favor of Jeffrey. The presiding judge, Justice Israel Rubin, famously stated, "The unusual facts of this case, as disclosed by the record, clearly warrant a grant of equitable relief to the buyer, who, as a resident of New York City, cannot be expected to have any familiarity with the folklore of the village of Nyack. Not being a local, plaintiff could not readily learn that the home he had contracted to purchase was haunted. Whether the source of the spectral apparitions seen by defendant seller are parapsychic or psychogenic, having reported their presence in both a national publication and the local press, defendant is estopped to deny their existence and, as a matter of law, this house is haunted." So what did this mean for One Lavetta Place? Well, ironically, rather than making it more difficult to sell as Jeffrey had predicted, it actually had the opposite effect. Suddenly, scores of curious home buyers and ghost hunters were eager to see the home on the Hudson that had been declared legally haunted. Among the interested buyers was the amazing Kreskin, a famed mentalist and paranormal enthusiast who hoped to purchase the home to store his collection of psychic memorabilia. Ultimately, however, Helen sold to another party in 1991 and moved to Florida, where she lived out the rest of her days. Since then, there have been four subsequent owners of One Lavetta Place, including filmmaker Adam Brooks and singer-songwriter Ingrid Michaelson. Strangely, however, none have reported supernatural sightings. In fact, singer Ingrid stated that she always found the home enchanting rather than spooky. Where had the ghosts gone then? Some believe the disgruntled Helen, having lost the court case, stormed off to the south, taking her special housemates with her. Others think the ghosts got bored and left. According to one psychic medium, the spectral occupants, allegedly an 18th century English couple identified as Sir George and Margaret, found the afterlife at One Lavetta Place a drag after the Ackleys left, so they moved too. Cynthia's husband Mark, however, believes the house is unlikely to stay dormant forever. Writing shortly after his mother-in-law's death in 2003, Mark declared, "I'm laying odds that Helen is back at One Lavetta Place again. Maybe she is, and maybe she's brought her revolutionary era mates back with her." With an asking price of $1.85 million, or about £1.6 million, One Lavetta Place is a big investment. But if you want to own a little piece of history, with exceptional views of the Hudson River, then the notorious Ghostbusters ruling house just might be the home for you. But buyer beware, it may or may not be haunted.